Block Talk Radio. No Block Talk Radio. Hold on. I don't know. Okay, that's Chuck. Okay, thanks, Chuck. Thank you, Chuck. And this is Rebooting the News number
79, I think.
And we're doing an unusual little number here today. We're not using Blog Talk Radio.
No, we're not using our studio either.
No, we're just using a classroom.
At NYU.
Yeah, and there's no Studio 20, I should add.
There's no students around.
No students. Adrian is off in New Mexico.
It's just you, me, and the internet.
God. What will become of us? And, so it's like a one microphone rebooting the news. And, maybe it'll work.
Light technology.
It's light. This is like my basic podcasting rig. This is like how I do my podcasts. And maybe if this works, maybe what we can do is like add two or three more mics in a mixer and have like a round table sort of discussion. Often wanted to do that. A little more informal basis. You know, we do these things once a week. And
yeah.
It's very formal. We have the studio and everything. But, you know, I sometimes like to do these things a little bit less formally. So maybe this will work.
Maybe we should add a stable of regular third contributors that we kind
of... Well, who do you really like? I mean, who's really
Doc
good?
Doc Searles.
You know, it's so funny. I mean, I love Doc. And Doc is like one of my absolute favorite people in the world. I mean, I don't say that about everybody, as you know, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. But my conversations with Doc outside of the studio are about 1 billion% more
interesting. Yeah, but isn't that the challenge right there?
It's a pretty good challenge.
Is to get that magic onto the podcast.
Okay.
Well, it's my idea anyway.
No, I think we're in agreement on this. I think we're in agreement. And I was pretty sure you'd say Doc. So, you know, let's do it with Doc if, you know, Doc willing, right? I mean, you know,
but Ryan Tate is also good.
Ryan Tate was great. Ryan Tate was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. So
as
we can
was
have him
Brendan Greeley.
Yeah, he was really good.
I think the young guys are, you know, there's a dynamic. With the young guys, I can sort of tease them a little bit and push them around. I kind of like that. With you, I sort of keep my hands, you know, I go like,
well, we push the listeners around.
Well, they don't get to say anything, I'm afraid. We're like Steve Jobs when it comes to the listeners. Boy, are we going to get roasted for that, huh? If anybody's actually listening.
Oh, we have a dedicated audience of dozens.
Yes, at least one or two dozen.
Let's get to some of our subjects.
Yes,
I would like to start off with what's currently convulsing the political and media worlds, this shooting in Arizona. And we don't want to say a lot about it.
There's not a whole lot to say.
But there's a few remarks I do want to make. I've actually been very circumspect in what I have
said. You haven't said anything, have you?
Probably. I have hardly said anything. But I do want to make this one point. Since everybody in the political class and the journalistic elite in Washington is now basically giving us the same line, which is that we should tone down the extreme rhetoric on both sides.
Oh,
that's
I like
key,
that one. On
the
both
key
sides.
Phrase, on both sides.
Yes. I will have to remember not to encourage anybody to kill Republicans.
Right. How many sides?
There's two.
Again?
According to these people, there are two.
So I really don't think it's two. So on how many sides should we be toning down the extreme rhetoric?
It's ridiculous, Jay. You don't have to try to parse it. It doesn't make any sense.
So what the point I wanted to make is that
that's Republicans saying that, by the way. FYI.
Everybody. No, let's say everybody.
Yeah, but it's the Democrats being duped by the Republicans.
Well, everybody in Washington is saying it for different reasons, and there's a dynamic.
Why are the Democrats saying it?
Well, it's a form of political correctness at moments like this, and they're observing the ritual of political correctness.
Isn't it funny, if you don't mind me like making this two-way, isn't it funny like when it comes time to pass the Patriot Act or go to war in Iraq, that at that point, it's not a time to STFU. It's time to stand by the president and let's all get in line and, you know, let's shut down civil liberties and let's go to war and, you know, don't second guess. But you see here, the hype is, you know, don't jump to any conclusions. You know?
Right.
You know, it's very, I wish George Carlin were alive because he would love this. I mean, it's the rhetoric is just so crazy. The National Rifle Association said today, well, there's nearly nothing to be said in this particular moment. because we should all presumably be grieving, and of course there is a lot of grief, right? But
I must not politicize.
But let's but let's translate that as we never want to talk about gun control, even when 9-year-old kids and 79-year-old grandmothers get offed by a lunatic who bought his gun legally. You know,
it's now's
like,
not the time.
Even now, we're not ever willing to talk about this. Even now,
now's not the time.
No, because
okay. But let me make the one point I want to make, which is that the focus of the extremes in political dialogue and the he said, she said, we don't know who's right approach are of a piece. They go together. When you think of simply presenting both sides as your job, you open yourself to the extremes. When you are unwilling to exert a fact check and say who's lying and who's closer to the truth, you are enabling the extremes.
No, it's not just the extremes. You're enabling a particular extreme here.
Extreme rhetoric.
You're enabling the people who are like, you're preventing us all from learning the lesson at the moment we're supposed to learn this lesson, those of us who need to learn it. That, you know, if you tell people to go out and kill people, some people will actually do it. There will be somebody who does it. So it's no accident that the Democrats got it this time. They're not the ones that are making they're not the ones that are doing the provocation, you know?
All right. Well, we don't have to spend much time on that, but this stupidity
you had a great example with Dave Weigel, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
And some reporter at the New York Times and
Matt Bai.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, it's good that you remember all these names. But and so one place they said, well, there are obviously two sides to this thing, and you know, that was the Times. Right, The View from Nowhere, Jay Rosen, famous.
Yeah, that was not Matt Bai. Those were two other reporters, Jim Ruttenberg and another reporter.
And what were they writing about?
They were writing about a spokesperson for Sarah Palin had tried to make the claim that her don't retreat, reload graphic showing gun sites where Democratic congressmen and Republican-leaning districts existed was not actually gun sites, it was surveying equipment.
Yeah, that was something, wasn't it?
And Dave Weigel, a ex-Washington Post reporter who now reports for Slate.com, looked at this claim, surveying equipment, and said, give me a break, that's a complete lie. And then produced all the different reasons
why. No, we have quotes from Sarah Palin.
Yeah, when reload, it's not about surveying equipment, right? So he just called it a lie. In the New York Times this morning, you can find a reference to this same statement by Sarah Palin aide, and they just present it and move on, as if there were nothing to be said in demonstration
of
how ludicrous this
is. The headline should say, former vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party can't even lie her way out of this one. And you know,
it's pathetic.
This raises... Well, talk about pathetic and inconsistent, even hypocritical. Remember the whole, I can't even remember the guy's name, when they discovered that Barack Obama had this pastor who, in Chicago.
Reverend Wright, right.
Now, the Republicans didn't say, well, you know, just the guy getting up there saying what he thinks, you know. No, they made a huge federal case out of it, right? I mean, isn't it roughly analogous to what Sarah Palin was saying? Except here the difference is that some poor person, a very, you know, well, the judge got killed, the 9-year-old girl got killed, the 79-year-old grandma got killed. In other words, there's a difference here that isn't necessarily being recognized, that we're no longer at the point where we're arguing about whether it's right or wrong for people to say really disgusting things about other people's lives and safety and bodies and so forth. We're not talking about it's actually happened. It's actually clearly happened.
Yeah, but I don't know. I myself don't necessarily see any connection between what this particular shooter did and what Palin
did. Well, you see,
I think
you're doing what the Times is doing. I think that it's obvious on its face that if it wasn't Palin per se that caused it, it was Glenn Beck or it was Rush Limbaugh or it was Savage.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Well, you haven't listened to those people. I don't think you really have you?
Sure. Whew.
You know, when you listen to that crap, okay, it's inevitable listening to it that there will be a reaction and that somebody will do it. Have you ever,
right,
let me ask you another question.
That's a climate-creating effect, which I do agree happens, but that's different from knowing that there's a connection between that.
Well, then we need to talk
individual.
To the Republicans who claim that they are, I don't know what the right word is, but that they're just, you know, good citizens and that are going on Rush Limbaugh's show and trying to get votes that way. That ought to be, that ought to not be considered civilized. There comes a point where winning isn't the only thing that matters, and you have to look into your heart and say, is this really something that I want to be associated with? So then so you pull away from it and you say, okay,
right.
Now what are we going to do? See, the problem is with the discourse that you're hearing, and this is only like 24 hours later, right?
Yes.
The problem with the discourse is that it's right versus left again.
Yes.
But the discourse shouldn't be that. The discourse should be happening, Jay, within the Republican Party. We should all be, the rest of us who are not Republicans, should be kicking back and listening,
yeah.
Okay, to them sort out this problem because
yeah.
the shit hit the fan, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it is true that there, you know, when they say there are leftists that do this and have provoked violence, it flashed on me. They're right. It has happened. It happened in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
Right? And we were alive then. I remember it. But that is like ancient, distant memory. It isn't happening on the left anymore. They grew up. They realized they weren't going to foment. The revolution wasn't going to materialize. They weren't going to take over the United States.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, Bobby Seale is a...
Here's a little tip to the mainstream news reporters who listen to us. Balance your stories if you need to balance them. Balance them... diachronically, that is, balance 1969 with 2011.
I don't think they're that sophisticated. That they're actually going back and making the comparison. Most of them don't remember. You know, everybody pointed out to me that, you know, Reagan was a Republican. You know, somebody pointed out that, and I quoted him, that the Democrats...
He was.
Absolutely. What they didn't point out was so was Gerald Ford, and he got shot at, too. You know, they're just not old enough to remember that.
The politics of assassination are complicated.
They are, but
yeah.
mostly these days they're going after the Democrats. It is true. If you look, if you add it up, it really is true.
All right, we gave it our 5 minutes.
There's a lot more to say, but most of it's emotional. So
yeah.
All right. Fucking Republicans.
Something that we have actually
I didn't really say that.
predicted or thought we were going to see happened this week with the court order. Given
yeah.
Twitter. We talked about that, hadn't we?
I've said it a few times myself.
Like what's going to happen when...
That eventually that line will get crossed, and
right.
Twitter will have to obey a court order. Yeah, and it happened.
So we know that Twitter got a court order for all kinds of information about 5 or 6 individuals connected to WikiLeaks, including the WikiLeaks account itself, but
right.
also others. And it's not a subpoena. It's actually... closer to what's called a national security letter. It's an order from the court to divulge certain information.
But it didn't have the secrecy, as amended, didn't have the secrecy requirements that the national security letter would have. In other words, if it were a national security letter, we wouldn't know about it, right?
Well, Twitter was able to
right.
challenge it, chose to
and
challenge it.
And for that, they get 5 points. That's
yeah.
a 5-pointer right there. They get some... And presumably Google and Facebook got these too, and Yahoo and eBay and so forth, and we haven't heard bookies from any of them. So Twitter's heads and shoulders above. You know?
Right.
They went above and beyond the Call of Duty.
They did, and we have to give them respect for that.
And on the other hand, they are a centralized network, and they lend themselves to this kind of problem.
Very much so.
Right.
Which is another point we've been making repeatedly, and is now pretty clear to a lot of people.
Yep.
So they did let people know who are the targets of this court order. That they are, and that gives them time to at least try to protest or protect themselves, even though in the end, everyone's pretty sure the information is going to be granted by
mm-hmm.
Twitter, too. But at least it shows us that someone at Twitter is thinking about how they want to position themselves and what they want to stand for.
Oh, they've been thinking about that a lot. That's not news, particularly. It's inescapable, and they know they're not going to prevail on this one. They know it. I saw an interview with Biz Stone a couple of weeks ago on CNN, and they asked him point blank, well, you know, if the government said, you know, would you turn over the data? And he said, yeah, I probably would. And they said, would you ever kick somebody off? And the assumption was like PayPal or like Amazon and so forth. And then he said, well, if they broke our terms of service, yes, we would. And then that's a coded answer, of course. That's a dog whistle. Like, what that means is go read our terms of service. What it says, we can kick you off
for anything.
Anytime we want.
Yeah.
If we don't like the way you look, you're out of here.
Right.
And it was kind of, I mean, you know, I'm always circumspect when people say stuff like this, so I add the caveat, but there was a look of death on his face. It was looked like there was no character. He was just reciting words that, you know, there used to be a spark, an enthusiasm, a passion amongst these guys. They used to have these sort of like, the sky's the limit, we're going to change the world, make the world a better place. You didn't see any of that here anymore. It's not like that.
Well, it's possible that's because they've gotten a lot of calls like this from the government.
Possibly. Also possibly that he's not the CEO anymore, and they've hired a guy who is probably a lot more expedient about these things and a lot less idealistic. More likely to say, look, we pick your battles, and you know we're not going to get anywhere with these WikiLeaks guys. They're never going to buy an ad. Okay, you know, realistically, true. They're never going to buy an ad, and the U.S. government might not buy an ad, but at least they won't shut us down. So, you know, if you look at the political climate from the point of view of Dick Costolo, who's the CEO of Twitter, you have to say that, you know, realistically, as a business person, don't bet on freedom being the stock and trade of the United States for the indefinite future. It's not looking too good. So one would want to make sure you have some good friends in D.C., you know. And that's probably how Twitter will react. That's probably, you know, the first battle is easy, right? It's like going to war. You know, when you go to war, it's, you know, for a good cause. Let's fight the good fight. Let's bring, you know, show them,
right.
You know, blah, blah,
when
blah.
When you realize it's going to be a long siege,
eventually,
it's a different idea.
Eventually, it has a whole different feel to it.
Yeah.
And I think that they're already way into that there at Twitter, that they've been getting a lot of these letters and they've been having a lot of conversations with the government.
But man, this WikiLeaks case continues to be such an X-ray into our new communication system.
Yeah, well, I'm shaking my head as you say that. It's not going to have a happy ending.
No.
Now, and I think we're going to hear the indictments are going to happen before the State of the Union. I think that there's a lot of, you know, that there's a rush to actually get some closure on this. And I would say before the end of this month, there'll be an extradition thing with Assange. They'll be trying to bring him here for trial.
Well, they'll be trying to. I think a lot of that speculation hinges on whether he goes to Sweden or not. If he stays in the UK, I think it's going to be harder for them to get
really?
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll
see. What happened to Sweden? Sweden used to be like, you know, the Scandinavian countries used to be havens, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, weren't people running?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know enough about
Swedish
political
culture. I think it's a conservative government.
Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, it was certainly interesting to learn that Twitter did this, and as you say, it's probably true that others did not, and we simply don't know it.
Yep.
Unbundling Twitter. Let's talk about that. It's on our list of topics.
Well, it's a long-term objective. I mean, for me, it's a long-term objective. I think it's a long-term objective for everybody that, you know, eventually it's become pretty clear that we put all of our eggs into, you know, it's a good basket, you know. Twitter is doing something useful. It's like an evolution of blogging, and it's an evolution of RSS, and it's a good idea, okay? What's not a good idea about Twitter is that, you know, and of course, this has probably been discussed on virtually every episode of the show, in my opinion, not a good idea to, you know, have it all run through one company's servers. So, you know, unbundling Twitter is one way of looking at the new architecture for RSS. I think we finally, by the way, beat off the idea that RSS is dead this week. I had a huge battle with the TechCrunch people on Twitter.
I know, that was so absurd.
Well, it's like, it has to be a battle at some point. At some point, if you want to get past it, we need to confront it, you know. And the truth is, at this point, that each of the people that are promoting this idea have jobs, and they work for big companies, and either those big companies have a tremendous interest in the survival of RSS, which is certainly true of Arrington's owner, AOL. AOL without RSS and without the web, the independent open web, is gone. They can't publish their content through Facebook. That's the end for them if that's the way they have to go. And so he's a paper tiger on this one. There's nothing that Arrington himself can do to shed himself from his dependency on RSS and the open web. Can't do it. You know, Scoble works at Rackspace. Rackspace is so firmly planted outside of those clouds. Everything they do exists outside of Google, outside of Twitter, outside of Facebook. I mean, you know, certainly those things are they have to connect to them, but they're in another place. And Steve Gilmore works at Salesforce.com, and I don't know whether they depend on RSS or not, but I don't know too many people, whatever. They all have jobs, and they all have reasons to want to say what they're going to say. And
This headline, this recurrent blog post title, Blank is Dead, is just, it's juvenile.
Isn't it something like Sarah Palin putting targets on her enemies and saying reload?
No, I think
it's juvenile.
Silly for that. I mean, it's the cheapest kind of tech blogging sensationalism. It's like kids in eighth grade. It really is. It's so stupid. And when challenged on it, you know, then it develops into an instant flame war. I mean, it's eighth grade. That's the best I could say. It's just junior high school behavior over and over again.
You know what I say about that is the world is junior high school behavior over and over and over again. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean it's irrelevant, okay? Just because it comes from immaturity doesn't mean it isn't a problem. You know, imagine a budget meeting at Time Inc., okay? And some wise ass who's been reading TechCrunch says, look, I did an analysis here, and I noticed that we're spending $80,000 a year on RSS feeds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he stretched the truth, and he's, you know, whatever. Right. He's thrown a lot of crap in there. And here is the leading tech publication, TechCrunch, and they say, this is dead. So Dilbert, sitting at the head of the table, says, well, I guess we could scratch out that line item. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm afraid of, Jay. And it would be suicidal for them to do it. But have you ever seen a publishing organization do something suicidal?
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe we need to worry about this, and maybe we need to nip this one in the bud. You know, and I think it's nipped. I think it's pretty well nipped, because I asked a bunch of follow-up questions and I heard nothing. I asked, hey, Mike, is PubSub Hubbub dead too? Because it seems to me if RSS is dead, that thing's even deader, okay? Mm-hmm. Right? Well, he can't say that because he's so dependent on Google for tips and, you know, and these guys all leave Google and do new startups and he's got to hear about those. He'll never say anything.
Don't you think he's just yanking your chain and he knows it's bullshit what he's saying?
Sure, absolutely. Does Arrington know it's bullshit?
Yeah.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lawyer and he's like the tauntingest kind of lawyer.
Yeah, he's taunting. That's what he's doing.
He's not, but, yeah, he may be yanking my chain. Well, then, in which case, it's very flattering. Because it's not like I have the secret key to the universe for this guy. He's already made it. He's mm-hmm. worth $25 million,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's got his
you know, what can I do to hurt or harm him or help him?
He's getting in the way of their headline, the sensationalist headline right
now. Well, it actually, by the way, it doesn't hurt my cause either.
No, I know. I'm just
you know, I mean, the next day I had an announcement about the new blogging tool. Guess what it's built around? RSS, right?
Yeah.
Well,
so what is this new blogging tool?
Okay.
Well, how is this going to help us solve this problem?
Totally going to help us solve
the problem.
How? Well, okay. So here's the deal.
And speak into the mic, if you will.
Yeah, oh, thank you very much. My audio engineer. Well, thing is this, is that you want to break the activity up into the smallest components you possibly can without creating a ridiculous situation. Because what you're trying to do is create lots of choice, you know, so that if I want to use a particular authoring tool to create my content, I got to have choice there.
Right.
If I want to use a different back end to host my content, got to have choice.
This is why loosely coupled is a key phrase.
That's right. Or as David Weinberger said, small pieces
loosely joined.
Very
right.
beautiful idea. Right? And the small part is important. But as Einstein said, simplify, but don't make it too simple.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing here, right? So small, but not too small. In other words, what you want to do is you want to find the sort of nuggets of functionality and then build interfaces between the components and make it so that every piece can be replaced, okay?
Right.
So one of those pieces is the piece where you put your ideas and information, right? It's the... And then So that could, in the, today's world, that is sort of a hodgepodge, right? It's, you've got WordPress, you've got blogging tools like WordPress, Tumblr, Posterous, Drupal to some extent is like
Blogger.com.
Blogger.com, right? You know, all these things sort of they fall in the category of blogging tools. And then you've got Twitter and Facebook sort of in another place.
Right.
What you don't have, though, is something that just purely gets your content into RSS feeds. Never done. Nobody's ever done it as far as I know. There may have been, I mean, I have played with it, but never shipped anything that did it. I don't know if anybody else played with it, but there's never been a, but yet it is a very rational piece. It's a very simple idea, is that first I've got to get the content to flow out in these packets.
A feed-generating device.
That's correct. And now the next question is, well, where do I want all these things to go?
Well,
I want them to go to the same places they've always been going. In other words, I want to have an option of having these news items go to WordPress, Tumblr, Posterous, Drupal.
Google Reader.
Well, wait. Yes, of course, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
That's one chunk, right?
Okay.
Yes, and then all the normal places RSS goes.
Right.
Google Reader, NetNewsWire, FeedBurner, even though
right.
I don't really like FeedBurner. You know, some people want to go there. They want to get the stats. You know, so sure, let's send it there, too. You know, and here's another one for you. Okay, so that's one category of blogging tools, where RSS normally goes.
Social media.
I got another one for you. The Twitter clients.
Right.
What about all those guys? You know, their oxygen supply is getting pretty, pretty thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have reason to believe, and I think they do too, that it's going to get even thinner.
In other words, they don't want to just be dependent on the Twitter API.
They know they can't just be dependent on the Twitter API. It's
right.
gone way, way beyond that. They can't exist with just that.
They should have done this
a year ago.
Right.
They should have built a bridge between all of them, but they didn't do it. They're too chicken or whatever, but they didn't do it. By the way, there's also a product that's a hybrid that's sitting right in between the feed readers and the Twitter clients, and that's Flipboard, which I know you like.
Yeah.
You know, Flipboard is, by the way, if you listen to Mike McHugh, is very much an RSS reader these days. And that's, of course, it's always pretty much been an RSS reader because these days are its only days. Then I have a bubble, and I've drawn this schematic, and you can include it in the show notes. Hopefully you will. I included a bubble which I call new apps because I don't know what else is going to be possible, right?
Right.
But for the first time now, because it's not like developers fitting into a piece of some corporation's API, okay? By the way, if you ask Dick Costolo, the CEO, are you a platform company? They did ask him this at CES. Are you a platform company? And he said, no, we have an API. That's what he said. So, in other words, they're not even trying to be a platform. He knows they're not, you know, and that's, you know, whatever. So, but maybe there's, now that you're not fitting into some company's API, but rather you're part of an ecosystem that's defined by a coral reef. Remember the coral reefs?
Yeah.
Each one of these pieces is like part of the coral reef. The whole thing together is a big coral reef. When it's all said and done, I don't want to be in the authoring tools business. I don't want to be in the back-end business. I don't want to be in WordPress's business. I don't want to be in any of those guys' businesses. In fact, I'm not starting a business, okay?
What business do you want to be in?
I don't want to be in a business.
What?
I'm done with being in businesses.
Your sentence begs for you want to do what? You don't want to be in those businesses.
I want to start a whole new thing. This is what I'm good at doing, basically. I was never a really good business starter, okay? I did a few of them by necessity because nobody had any idea. You couldn't go and say, look, I'm trying to create an ecosystem. They would throw you out on your ass and say, who the fuck are you to be creating an ecosystem? Yet that was what I was trying to do. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to make a business. You know, every time I've tried to make a business, I've done much better at making an ecosystem.
So you're creating the tools for an ecosystem that would stand outside these private companies.
That's correct.
Using loosely coupled
correct.
Core elements
that right. not to
combine
say
that, in different ways.
And right. And not to say that the entities here can't, most of them be corporations, for-profit
right.
corporations, or maybe even all of them. However, I'll tell you, there's one requirement in each one of these areas, and it's one of the reasons why you want to do it this way, is I have to have the option to have that content on my server. I don't have to have it on my server. That's the not option. I have to have the option of having it on my server.
Right.
And that has to not just be a theoretical option, but it has to be a viable one. Right. It has to be something where I wake up one day and I say, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this Twitter corp. I don't like the way they're censoring this guy. I don't like the way they're pushing these people.
No more to the cloud.
Right. I'm going
to
go
to the server.
I'm going to go pay somebody some money. Right. This is a key point. I'm going to pay somebody some money to put this stuff on there, and then they're going to treat me like a customer.
Right.
Very big difference. Or I'm a hobbyist or a hacker or whatever you want to call me, and I've got FiOS at home like both of us do.
Yep.
And I decided,
as fast up as it is down.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It means you can put a pretty nice server up there, Jay.
Yeah.
So I have an old Mac, you know, mini. I'm going to go ahead and put my website on there. Right?
Okay. So this is the first time I've understood how we could break from Twitter, is when you said that the clients are one of the groups to which you, because I can see this happening now. If TweetDeck receives not just the flow from the Twitter API, but from one of these loosely coupled systems, right, then all of a sudden, if you're a user of TweetDeck, then Dave's updates still come to you, even though he's escaped from Twitter, if one day you do that.
Probably.
Right?
Exactly right. That's why people say, you know, how are you going to, like, overcome the install-based advantage of Twitter?
Right.
I'm not going to overcome it. I'm going to build on it.
Right.
Why can't people who want to use to communicate with people who are on Twitter be able to communicate with people on Twitter?
Right. So if I'm just using...
And let's put it another way. If I set it up so that I have to get over that, never happened. Don't bother. It won't happen. That's the problem that status.net/Identica is having. The way they've set it up, they only make sense when they reach critical mass themselves.
Right.
And therefore, they'll never reach critical mass.
That's the problem, yeah.
You can prove it mathematically. They can't get there because what they didn't do was they didn't do the old Microsoft trick of embrace and extend. You have to do that. You have to accept first what's already there. If you can't find a way to do that, then you're screwed. You can't do it. And, you know, Twitter, had they been more clever, probably could have done more things to prevent that from happening. They probably can still do that, by the way, too. In fact, they almost certainly will.
So maybe if one of these systems begins to catch on, Twitter will become more like its clients themselves, you're saying, and accept feeds other than...
No, they might go the other way.
The other way.
They might just shut the door entirely.
And make close
it,
off their API.
And make it either or. Make it either or. In other words... In or out, you make the decision. It's like you say to you, if you have a cat, right? The cat's sort of sitting there in the doorway.
Yeah,
can't just say, if you ever had a cat, cats do this all the time.
It's just to drive you crazy.
They can't figure out which way they're going.
In or out.
So you got to make your choice, in or out. Or it's like that old, you like Elvis Costello, right? I like Little Feet. They have this great song.
I remember Little Feet.
They have this great song called Rocket in My Pocket. And he talks about his girlfriend frustrating. She's got one foot on the platform and one foot on the train.
Right.
You know, sooner or later, you got to figure out where you are. And that's they eventually will say that. I bet on it. You know, they could have gone the other way. And I think they've got some, you know, disharmony there within the, you know, paradise or trouble in paradise or whatever. Because I'm sure... that, you know, old Fred Wilson and Bijan Sabe, they seem like really good guys. And so I would imagine in the board meetings, who knows, whatever. Somebody in there wants to go the other way. But
okay, so where are you in this process of...
Pretty well, doing pretty well. Okay, so...
How far along are we?
Well, you know, you have to go at the rate that people are ready to go. I mean, so that's how far along we are. But we've had one really big success so far, is that, okay, so I have River of News, right, River 2. And that's certainly one of the displayers, is certainly one of the components. In other words, it's the piece of Twitter, you know, if you look at the top of the page of Twitter, it's where your entry box is. That's where my editing tool fits in. That's called, by the way, my.reallysimple.org. That's mine. That's my version of it. Before anybody sees that out in the outside world, there'll be competition for it. So don't think of that as the product. This is a problem I had describing this to, I was meeting with Chris Dixon, who's an angel investor, a really smart guy. He kept coming up, he says, well, what does it look like when I get onto your system? Is it a website? Is it an app? No, it's all those things. It's anything you want it to be. So I'm not going to, so anyway, so there's that component sitting there. River 2, out of which we made wikiriver.org. Remember that one? Well, so everybody said, hey, make it beautiful. So I went to we have a mail list that's called River of News at Google Groups. And the purpose of that mail list is to try to put skins on Rivers of News,
mm-hmm.
make them beautiful. Well, we were already way far along in that project, and here we had wikiriver.org. So that's got a beautiful skin. Everybody loves the way it looks. Very important. It's got to look nice, right? Not only does it have to look nice, but it has to be subject to user choice. And for that, we now have a JSON API for the River of News. May not mean much if you're not technical, but it means a lot if you're a modern sort of web developer. This seems to be the key. I was looking for the key that unlocks their creativity, and that was it.
Okay, so we have those two things.
Right, and now the next step is to bootstrap the skinning of the back end of the blogging tool. We have RSS Cloud, which is the notification system. It's the way you get real-time updates. Yesterday, I did a little mini project with the developer of TwitterFeed.com. Very useful site. What he does is he takes an RSS feed and maps it onto a Twitter account. Okay, so in other words, all I have to do is publish to a Twitter feed, and the updates go to whatever Twitter account I've mapped that feed onto, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's great, except it could be very slow because he's polling. In other words, he'll get around to looking at my feed every half hour. So I said, well, what about if I just call you up and say, hey, dude, my feed just changed. Why don't you check it out? So he implemented that last night. And now, as an experiment, we have the Hacker News Firehose feed going into Twitter, and I swear to God, it updates as fast as the Hacker News website does.
So let me
see how important it is to be fast.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you can have this system built entirely outside these proprietary companies. It has the ability to create like a river of updates.
Which is how Twitter does it.
Independently.
Right.
You could send them independently to the clients, but you could also render that as a Twitter feed.
Yeah.
So you could be on and off Twitter.
Very
at the same
important.
Time.
I'm never going to, I don't have any plans, let's put it this way, of deleting at Dave Weiner on
right.
Twitter. But on the other hand, I don't want to be bound into their system.
Right.
I want to be independent of their system.
Right.
Well, sometime this week I'm going to flip that switch, Jay. Okay.
You are
absolutely going to. I'm almost there. Right. And
uh-huh.
And Howard Rheingold, love the guy, asked for exactly that last week. I said, Howard, if you can stick around a little while, I'm almost there. And so I'm going to get Howard. And you know, Jay, there'll come a time when I'm going to come knocking on your door. And
what thing. Happens to 40 twits?
No, I'm never going to break that. It's going to keep working. It has
with
to
this new system.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to ask you to give up anything. I know better than that. You can't ask users. You know, we talked about the first user idea, right? So, you know, everybody I know, Jay signs his emails to me, the users, which I really like, by the way. Sometimes I sign it the asshole developer.
Right. the help team.
The night.
Right,
help.
The night shift.
Because it's just complaining about my lot in life, right? Which is what all developers do. But, no, but I know that I would never ask the users. You can never. I learned this one a long time ago when I came out with a product called ThinkTank 128 for the Mac. It was one of the first Mac products. Came out in 1984. Before that, we had ThinkTank for the Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were really rushed to get this product out, you know, because we wanted to be one of the first. And so it had half the features that the Apple II product had. And the users screamed bloody murder. What do you mean taking all those features out? I don't think we took any features out. We, you know, whatever. But they don't care. They want all the features.
Right.
Right? So, yeah, you got to have your 40 twits. Luckily, that's a loosely piece, a small piece loosely joined, too. It just simply won't break.
Right.
It'll keep working no matter how you post your tweets. It doesn't matter. It doesn't care. That's how all these things have to be built.
Well, that's very interesting progress. We have a few minutes left. Why don't we talk about future safe archives?
Well, before we close that one, just want to say that there are a lot of developers paying attention now, which is a very good sign. You know, I've been here before where you know, every move, sometimes you can, like, blast out the greatest idea in the world and you get no response. That's usually the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when the time is right, everything you do gets a lot of reaction. And We're not quite there yet, okay? But we're getting to the point where I'm not lonely. When I introduce a new spec like I did yesterday, I get feedback, like, within a few hours. I'm getting a lot of feedback. So
yeah.
It's a good sign.
You think the WikiLeaks revelations have anything to do with it?
I think it's all part of a perfect storm. I think it all fits together. And, you know, it's hard to say what in particular is responsible for what. It just is the season of we need to get our data. It
certainly goes back to what Douglas Rushkoff said, though, at the Flash conference.
Yeah.
This is showing us we don't have the internet we thought we had.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. No, Douglas, I don't know if I told you this, but I was sitting and listening to what Douglas was saying, and I basically tore up my speech.
He did say that. Yeah.
I wrote a new one because, you know, I so totally agree with everything he said.
Yeah.
Brilliant guy.
Yeah.
All right, so what was the last thing?
Future Safe Archive.
Yeah. We got a really nice plug, right? As did you get a nice NPR acknowledged voice from
The View from Nowhere. A little NPR piece appeared last week about The View from Nowhere.
Well,
which
more
was,
than that, it was Jay Rosen was on this
podcast,
right?
Yeah. It was the only time an idea of mine had its own segment on NPR. That's the first.
It'll happen again. I think I've told you this privately. I say it now semi-publicly with all 20 people who listen to the podcast, is that your ideas are now current. And,
well, thank you.
Know, it's not everybody doesn't know it yet, okay? Let's put it that way. But
well, The View from Nowhere certainly crossed over.
It crossed over.
No question.
Yeah.
And Future Safe Archives was the subject of a pretty detailed and serious article in the New York Times Magazine this week.
I went back and looked. I was exchanging emails with this guy, 21 back and forth, no interview. I said, you know, this is my policy, no interviews. But I did send him pointers to all the pieces that I had written, and this guy read them all. And you know, you could tell if he started working on this thing in August. So,
really?
Yeah. So it was very thoroughly researched.
That's a good thing about the New York Times Magazine.
Yeah, and plus real smart and not superficial. You know, we had some disagreements. I don't think that you can look to that, and this is not a problem for individual entrepreneurs to solve. I think you inherently need long-lived institutions to get behind this. And that's not to say creativity isn't a very important part of it. It is. But I felt my ideas were – this is the real test. I felt my ideas were very well represented in the piece. You know, no sound bites quoted to make out of context, to make it appear as if I believe one thing when I really believe the other. You know,
right.
All the things that you watch out for. You know, this was not like that. I felt very well regarded and listened to, and I felt the piece presented all the arguments, all the different sides of this one. And one can only hope that as a result of this, then, you know, this will help people take this idea a little more seriously, that we really are not creating a permanent record here at all.
Right.
Yeah. And that maybe we ought to try.
And that we can't rely on these companies.
So
it's totally related to what we were just
absolutely
discussing.
Cannot rely on these companies. And then, you know, they would have never told you that you could, but they also wouldn't fight you if you wanted to believe it. You know?
Right. What this really is about is where is the public sphere actually supported?
Yeah.
And to have a public sphere based in private companies is a contradiction in terms.
Yeah. Forget who said this. My memory is so bad. But maybe you'll remember, is that we're like trying to have discourse in a public shopping mall. That this is not...
Right. It's very related to all the shopping mall cases.
Right.
Because the shopping malls in many suburban communities are, in fact, the town square.
Right.
But the town square is not the property of the town or
right.
the people, but of these developing, you know, developers. And their the duty to the First Amendment and to being a public space is almost nil.
Right.
And so it's just a re-emergence of that problem on a different planet.
You know, I read another article. This was in the Times. It was quoted. It was linked to when Sarah Palin's daughter bought a house in a really far-out town, suburban town in Arizona called Maricopa. And this was an article that ran right after the housing bubble burst. And they used this town as an example. And so you got to wonder, why are they buying a house in a place that's basically a ghost town, but they are. And the story said that they could not convince the town, which had grown from, like, you know, one street with a gas station and a, you know, and a 7-Eleven to now a town of like 150,000 people, couldn't convince me to build a high school. Mm-hmm. I said, nobody wants to live near the high school, so we're not building one. So here's this town of 150,000 people right. with no high school.
Right.
And, you know, it's like you said, it's like there's no, they're not creating humanity. Oh, this is definitely something I want to talk about with you at some point. It's like, it's where have, what are we good at anymore in our society? We're good at growing and that's it. We're not good at growing in any kind of meaningful, useful, functional way. There's really no point to all the growing we're doing.
We're not good at accountability.
No. No.
We're good at secrecy by complexity. We're good at that. We're good at rendering institutions opaque. We're very good at that. We're good at turning over our public functions to private enterprise. We can definitely know how to do
that. We're also over.
And we're over time.
We're over time.
This has been Rebooting the News, number 79.
This is, if anything, a good foundation for a future discussion to have.
Dave, once again, a pleasure. See you next week.
Thanks very much.